Welcome to the BritishBattles.com podcast on the Battle of Belmont. The battle fought on 23rd November 1899 in the Great Boer War, beginning the British advance to relieve Kimberley, besieged by the Boers. My name is John McKenzie. I am the editor of BritishBattles.com. I write the text for the entries in BritishBattles.com. I also select the illustrations and draft the maps under my nom de carte of John Fawkes. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site for the Battle of Belmont, where you will see a number of illustrations and my map of the battle. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I invite you to send me your comments to info@BritishBattles.com. The Battle of Belmont was fought on 23rd November 1899 on the western border of the Orange Free State, northwest of Cape Colony in southern Africa, between 9,000 British troops commanded by Lieutenant General Lord Methuen and 2,000 Boers led by Commandant J. Prinsloo. The Boer War was a serious jolt for the British Army. At the outbreak of the war, British tactics were appropriate for the use of single-shot firearms, fired in volleys controlled by company and battalion officers, the troops fighting in close order. These tactics had to be entirely rethought in battle against the Boers armed with modern weapons. In the months before hostilities, the Boer Commandant General, General Joubert, bought 30,000 Mauser magazine rifles, firing smokeless ammunition. He also bought modern field guns and automatic weapons from Krupp, Creusot and Maxim. In error, Joubert bought high explosive ammunition for the field guns, the appropriate ammunition for use in open battle being shrapnel. Most Boers were countrymen, running their farms from the back of a pony with a rifle in one hand. These rural Boers brought a lifetime of marksmanship to the war, an important advantage further enhanced by Joubert's consignment of smokeless magazine rifles. The Boer commandos, without formal discipline, welded into a fighting force through a strong sense of community. Field cornets led burghers by personal influence, not through any military code. The Boer commander, Viljoen, is said to have coined the aphorism, "We will win through God and the Mauser." Other than in the regular uniformed Staats artillery and police units, the Boers wore everyday civilian clothes on campaign. The British infantry were armed with the Lee Metford magazine rifle, firing 10 rounds. But no training regime had been established to take advantage of the accuracy and speed of fire of the weapon. Personal skills, such as scouting and field craft, were little taught. The idea of individual firing from cover was largely unknown, many regiments still going into action in close order. Some of the most successful British troops were the non-regular regiments, the Imperial Light Horse, the City Imperial Volunteers, the South Africans, Canadians, Australians and New Zealanders, who more easily broke from the habit of earlier British colonial warfare, using their horses for transport rather than the charge, advancing by fire and manoeuvre in loose formations and making use of cover, rather than the formal advance into a storm of Mauser bullets. The British artillery was a powerful force in the field, but was underused by commanders with little training in the use of modern guns in battle. The Royal Field Artillery fought with 15-pounder guns, the Royal Horse Artillery with 12-pounders, and the Royal Garrison Artillery batteries with 5-inch howitzers. The Royal Navy provided heavy field artillery with a number of naval guns mounted on field carriages devised by Captain Percy Scott of HMS Terrible. Automatic weapons were used by both sides. Having started the hostilities, the Boers found themselves without an achievable war aim. The only strategy that might have had a chance of success would have been to invade and occupy the whole of Cape Colony, Natal, and the other neighbouring British colonies. The two Boer republics did not have the resources to carry out such an extensive operation. In any case, they could not have prevented a British sea landing to retake the colonies. Once war was declared, the Boers invaded and occupied Natal as far as the Tugela River, but with Ladysmith holding out in their rear. The Orange Free State government was not prepared to allow its forces to advance further south in Natal. In Cape Colony, some of the citizens of Boer origins joined their brothers from the two republics, but most did not. The only other offensive operations the Boers carried out were to besiege Mafeking in the north and Kimberley near the Cape Colony border. Both sieges were unsuccessful and took up substantial Boer resources. Limited incursion was carried out into the central area of Cape Colony, up to the area around Stormberg. The major difficulty for the Boer armies was that, although competent in defence, digging field fortifications and using their magazine rifles to great effect to defend them, the Boers lacked an effective offensive capability. The absence of formal military discipline made it difficult for the Boer commanders to devise strategies they could rely on their troops to carry out. As the British built up their armies and began to advance, defeat for the Boers became inevitable. The two Boer republics, the Transvaal and the Orange Free State, began the war against Great Britain on 14th October 1899. Their principal operation was to invade Natal. They also began sieges of Mafeking and Kimberley, both important towns along the western borders of the two Boer republics. The authorities in Great Britain prepared to send an army corps to South Africa under the command of Lieutenant General Sir Redvers Buller. The three battles in Natal, Tallana Hill on 20th October, Elandslaagte on 21st October, and Ladysmith on 30th October 1899, saw the British force in northern Natal under Lieutenant General Sir George White penned up in Ladysmith and put under siege by the Boers. Buller arrived in Cape Town with the Army Corps and prepared his strategy for the war. Lord Methuen would command the force with the task of marching up the railway running north along the western border of the Boer republics to relieve Kimberley and eventually Mafeking. Lieutenant General Gattaca would command in the central front. Sir George White, the British commander-in-chief in Natal, was under siege in Ladysmith, so a general fell to be appointed to command the relief force in Natal. Buller took this role on himself, leaving the overall strategy of the war with no guiding hand. Buller expected it would take him 2 weeks to relieve the Ladysmith garrison, after which he would return to Cape Colony. Buller was to spend the rest of the active war crossing the Tugela River and relieving Ladysmith. Eventually, the British government sent a strong command team of Lord Roberts and General Kitchener to take over the offensive in the Orange Free State from Cape Colony. Until Roberts and Kitchener reached South Africa, Lord Methuen was left to command the only advance on the Boer republics. Lieutenant General Lord Methuen landed at Cape Town on 10th November 1899. His task with his division was to force his way north up the route of the Cape Town to Bulawayo Railway and raise the Boer siege of Cecil Rhodes' Diamond Town, Kimberley. The British authorities feared that a Boer capture of Kimberley would considerably increase the financial resources available to the Boer republics through access to Kimberley's diamond mines. The forward base for Methuen's force was already established at De Aar in the north of Cape Colony, approximately 60 miles from the Orange River, forming the border with the Orange Free State. Substantial quantities of supplies were stockpiled at Da'ar for his use. At Orange River Bridge were the 9th Lancers, Rimmington's Guides, 1st Battalion Northumberland Fusiliers, 1st Battalion Royal Munster Fusiliers, a battery of the Royal Field Artillery, and an armoured train. On 10th November 1899, Colonel Gough led a mounted force north to a point 9 miles east of Belmont. An action took place, supported by British infantry, brought forward by train from Orange River Station. It ended with a hurried British withdrawal in the face of a larger-than-expected Boer force. A lesson from this action was that the British officers were too conspicuous and must dress and arm more like their soldiers to avoid unnecessary officer casualties. Methune arrived in Da'ar and was ready to move out on 20th November 1899. Methune commanded a force comprising 2 infantry brigades and a Royal Navy contingent. The Guards Brigade of 3rd Grenadiers, 1st and 2nd Coldstream, and 1st Scots Guards. The Naval Brigade of Royal Navy Sailors and Royal Marines from HMS Doris and Powerful, and the 9th Brigade, comprising 1st Northumberland Fusiliers, 1st Manchester's, 2nd King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, 2nd Northamptonshire Regiment, and half of the 1st Loyal North Lancashire Regiment, and 2 batteries of Royal Field Artillery, 18th and 75th Batteries, with 12 guns, and 4 Royal Navy long 12-pounders, manned by sailors from HMS Doris. Methune's cavalry comprised 2 squadrons of the 9th Lancers, 100 Rimmington's Guides, and some mounted infantry. Methune's force numbered around 7,500 infantry, 16 guns with their gunners, and around 500 mounted men, in all around 9,000 men. Intelligence reports suggested that the Boer forces facing Methune in his advance to Kimberley were weak in numbers, ill-organised, and of low fighting capacity. Methune was advised that his advance to Kimberley would be scarcely contested. This assessment proved to be completely wrong. Methune resolved to march as light as possible. Baggage and stores were cut down, and officers were not permitted to take tents. The battalions were to march without bugle or drum to keep noise to a minimum. The column stood to arms at midnight on the night of 20th-21st November, the intention being to march at night to avoid the heat of the day. For some reason, the order to march was not given until after 2:30 a.m. The cavalry, Guards Brigade and artillery led the column, followed by the 9th Brigade. The first day's march was 10 miles to Fincham's Farm. The sun rose and was fiercely hot. There was no water available, other than that carried in the containers. The route was across open sandy veldt with no natural cover. Nothing was seen of the Boers, although Boer scouts were keeping track of the British. The British column halted for the night at Fincham's Farm. A party of 9th Lancers and Rimmington's Guides rode on to Thomas's Farm at Belmont, coming under fire on the way, where they again came under fire and returned to the main body. On 22nd November 1899, Methune's division marched out for the next halt at Belmont. The route was again north, following the railway line. As the troops marched into the campsite at Belmont, it was known that the Boers were in position to the east and there would be a fight the next day. Some 10 miles to the east of Belmont and running approximately parallel with the railway line lay a line of kopjes or hills running roughly northwest to southeast. The Boers were occupying these kopjes, Table Hill to the north and Gun Hill in the centre. Behind these two copies lay a higher line of copies. In the centre of this line was a deep neck with a copy called Mont Blanc to its north, and to its south Razorback and Sugarloaf Hill. The Boers were positioned on all these high points. The British transport was still on the road from Orange River, so there was little for the troops to eat that night. Methuen planned an attack in the pre-dawn darkness on the Boer positions. The 9th Brigade was to attack Table Hill, the northern feature, while the Guards attacked Gun Hill. Each brigade was to be supported by an artillery battery. Both these attacks were intended to be flanking movements. Two squadrons of 9th Lancers, with a company of mounted infantry, were to march north from Belmont Station and move in a wide arc round to the rear of the Boer positions. A further detachment of mounted troops was to advance on the right flank of the infantry line. The guns were to cover the advance with a shrapnel barrage on the Boer positions. The troops marched out at around 3 a.m. on 23rd November, well after the intended start time of 1:30 a.m. The 9th Brigade advanced on Table Hill, 1st Northumberland Fusiliers on the left, 1st Northamptonshires on the right, and 2nd King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, and two companies of Royal Munster Fusiliers, which had just arrived, in reserve. The Guards Brigade on the right moved towards Gun Hill, 3rd Grenadiers on the right and the 1st Scots Guards on the left, with the two Coldstream battalions in reserve, to the right of the forward line. In the darkness of the early morning, the Guards line moved to the right, losing the essence of a flank attack and committing the troops to a frontal assault on the Boer positions. The wire fence along the railway line, which was in the way of the advance, was cut using axes, as no wire cutters were on issue to the troops. Alarmed wild animals were put up as the British troops marched forward. It was feared that the noise must warn the Boers of the impending attack on them. In fact, the Boer commanders, without carrying out proper surveillance of the advancing British force, assumed it was still at Freeman's Farm awaiting its transport. The dawn came at around 4 a.m. The British line had advanced around 4 miles, but was still some distance from the Boer positions. Both brigades were marching across open veldt when the rising sun showed the Boers the threat to their positions. They opened a heavy fire on the advancing British infantry. The two leading Guards battalions, 3rd Grenadiers and 1st Scots Guards, went to ground and fired volleys at the Boer positions for around half an hour, while the 9th Brigade continued to scale Table Hill on their left. At 4:30 a.m., the two batteries came up and went into action, shelling the Boer positions with shrapnel. The Guards continued with their advance and, in the face of a heavy but largely ineffective fire, stormed the hill. The Boers on Table Hill and Gun Hill did not wait for the final bayonet attack, but hurried away down the far hillside to where their ponies were tethered and rode back to join their comrades on the next line of copies, Mont Blanc, Razorback and Sugarloaf. By the time the British infantry reached the top of the hills, the Boers were gone. The British artillery opened a barrage on the Boer second line, which was answered by the Boer guns and continued for an hour and a half. At about 5:45 a.m., the British resumed the advance. The Grenadiers and Scots Guards headed straight up Mont Blanc, with much of the 9th Brigade coming down off Table Hill in behind the two Guards battalions. The two Coldstream battalions moved further to the right and stormed the Boer positions on Razorback and Sugarloaf Hills. Some companies of Coldstreamers put in an attack on the extreme left of the line. Again, once the attacking British infantry reached the summits of the hills, The Boers jumped on their ponies and raced away, bringing the battle to an end. One or two further positions were occupied by small parties of Boers and cleared by the British, but broadly the battle was ended. The inadequate numbers of British cavalry precluded any effective pursuit, the 9th Lancers having been forced to withdraw to the area of Belmont after attempting an incursion around the Boer right flank. British casualties were 75 officers and soldiers killed and 223 wounded. Boer casualties were said to have been 83 killed, 20 wounded and 30 captured, including a German artillery commandant and 6 field cornets. Methuen's force continued its advance, with the Battle of Graspan taking place on 25th November 1899. Following the loss of officers in the initial action north of the Orange River, officers were required to reduce their profile by dulling their buttons and accoutrements, and where possible, to carry rifles in line with their soldiers. The Welsh champion boxer Di St John was a soldier in 3rd Grenadier Guards. St John was a 6'3", 28-year-old ex-Welsh miner who joined the army when his boxing career faltered. At Belmont, he is said to have led his company up Gun Hill and killed several Boers with the bayonet. Struggling to remove the bayonet from his final victim, St John was shot in the head and killed. St John was a veteran of the Battle of Omdurman. The commander of the 9th Brigade, General Fanshawe, spelt Featherstone Hall, during the Battle of Belmont rode up and down in the front of his brigade's line with his staff. This had the effect of drawing fire on his party and masking his own men's fire. Eventually a soldier of the 9th Brigade asked him in a peremptory tone to move out of the way and let the soldiers fire. Fanshawe was shot and severely wounded. Reverend Eustace St Clair Hill, attached to the 9th Brigade, insisted on entering the firing line at Belmont and administering the last rites to the wounded soldiers. An officer remonstrated with him, and he replied, "This is my place, and I am doing my special business." Hill, educated at Lancing and Christchurch, Oxford, was a civilian clergyman in Grahamstown until he joined Lord Methuen's army, serving through the Boer War. Hill settled in South Africa and accompanied the South African forces to France in the First World War. Hill lost an arm at Delville Wood and was awarded the Military Cross before returning to South Africa. Several incidents of Boers raising a white flag and continuing to fight were recorded at Belmont and at Graspan. Colonel Crabb and Lieutenant Willoughby of the 3rd Grenadiers are said to have been wounded after white flags had been raised. Lieutenant Blundell, also of the Grenadiers, stopped to give water to a wounded Boer, who then shot him. Methuen was criticised for conducting a frontal attack at Belmont. Armchair tacticians in Britain said he should have enveloped the Boer positions by marching around each end. That is the end of this podcast on the Battle of Belmont. I hope you have enjoyed it and thank you for listening. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site on the battle, where you will find pictures of the battle and images of the regiments that took part, with a map of the battle. Finally, I would invite you to look at the list of British Battles podcasts on www.britishbattles.com/BritishBattles.com/podcasts.